As we look through with Joseph the last couple of weeks, you know, we've taken note of the fact that in Hebrews we have individuals who accepted what God said, they trusted in what God said, and then they acted upon what God said. Joseph is one of those individuals. We're giving a snippet of his life, which we will actually get to the part in Genesis chapter 50 that is referenced in Hebrews 11 here shortly. But as we look at the beginning of the context in chapter 10 of Hebrews, we see the quotation from Habakkuk, "The just shall live by faith." So we ask the question, how shall the just live? By faith. By faith Abel, by faith Enoch, by faith Noah, by faith Abraham, by faith Sarah, by faith Isaac, by faith Jacob, now by faith Joseph. These people are not being put up because they're contrary to what Habakkuk says, the just shall live by faith. They're put up because they have, in fact, conducted their lives in this way. Were they perfect? Hardly. They couldn't be perfect. They tried. And in some cases, they were better than others. Enoch, for instance. You know, Enoch's life was cut short by two-thirds. Two-thirds. Everybody's living to be 900, and when he's 300 and some change, God says, come on, you're going with me. I'm not going to leave you back here anymore. You're going with me. So he was allowed to go with God, not experience death, because he walked with God. Was he perfect? No. But he had such an amazing relationship with God. Joseph has an amazing relationship with God. Even at a young age, he was a very responsible young man. That's why he was put in charge of his brothers. We discussed that last week. We're going to see this week why he was the one in charge of the 12. Because without him there, we're going to see how much was getting done. And it wasn't very much. Joseph, in his father's house, was young. He had a dream. His dream about the sun, the moon, and the stars. Jacob kind of kept that in his mind. But he, you know, what are you doing dreaming dreams like that? Well, last time I checked, you can't make yourself dream. Have you ever had a really good dream and you woke up and you tried to go back to sleep so you could finish the dream? Yeah, I see a couple of you nodding your head. How'd that work? Doesn't work. It's frustrating because you wanted to see the rest of the story. It's like, you know, watching an hour and a half of a movie and you miss the last 20 minutes to see what happened. You know, we can't control our dreams. We can't control our dreams. God put that in his mind, and it showed, as we get a little bit further into the story, it showed why God gave him that dream, because it was going to confirm something later on. So we get to Genesis chapter 41, and we have Pharaoh's dreams. Now, what does Pharaoh have to do with Joseph? Well, where is Joseph at this time? He's in prison. He had been forgotten, hadn't he?
Not by God.
Not by God. Not by God. But what were the last words that he said as the butler's being released?
Remember me.
Remember me. And what happened? He was forgotten. He's left in the jail cell. He's in charge of the other prisoners. Everywhere he goes, he rises to the top. You ever known anybody like that? Everywhere they go, I mean, they find their way to the top. Why? It's just intrinsic in who they are. Some people are natural leaders. It's a natural thing. Not everybody is a leader.
Right.
Have you noticed that? But yet, today we tell all of our kids that you can be whatever you want to be. If your daughter is 4'9" and 150 pounds, she cannot be a center in the NBA. I don't care how hard she tries. Okay? I mean, we need to be encouraging of our children and realistic at the same time so we don't set them up for failure. You know, we've only had 46 presidents of the United States. Not everybody can grow up to be president of the United States. I know we've tried really hard to make that, prove that point, but you can't. Not everybody can. Not everybody can win a Super Bowl. Not everyone can win a Nobel Peace Prize or a Nobel Prize in another discipline. You've got to understand these things, okay? Not everybody has the propensity for those things. However, do we need garbage collectors?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Do we need people to dig lines for cables and power to go through?
Yes.
We need lots of things. As a matter of fact, it doesn't matter who President of the United States is. If we don't have somebody to dig a ditch to put a line in, well, you know, so what? If we've got trash piling up in the street, so what? We need a lot more trash collectors than we need presidents. Okay? We need, it, to borrow a phrase and not to be insensitive, and I know some people find stuff like this insensitive, but we need fewer chiefs and a lot more Indians. Not everybody can be a chief. We understand that, right? Not everybody can be a chief. Do you know that that all-star quarterback doesn't become an all-star quarterback if there's not a lot of guys that you don't know doing their job on the football team? Because there's 11 guys on the field at the same time. Probably don't know most of their names. You know Tom Brady. You know Aaron Rodgers. You know those guys. But you don't know the big uglies in front that protect him from the big uglies up from the other side. Right? We need all that. Joseph was a Tom Brady. Joseph was a John Kennedy. Joseph was one of those guys, one of those once-in-a-lifetime guys. He was blessed genetically, and he was blessed emotionally. He was blessed intellectually, and he was blessed by God spiritually. He was the complete package. So he is left, he is forgotten, he is in jail. Pharaoh has a dream. He has seven fat cows and then seven scrawny cows come out and gobble them up. He sees seven plump grains, stalks of grain, and then he sees seven emaciated stalks of grain gobble them up. Nobody can answer him. Oh, wait, I forgot. There's this guy. And all of a sudden, Joseph is summoned. Now, this guy's been in prison probably not as clean as he should be. They may have cleaned him up some. His clothes probably not as presentable as they should have been. They may have given him some extra clothes. And here he comes to appear before Pharaoh. Remember, Egypt is the ruling party in the world. That's who they are. So Pharaoh is the guy. He's the guy. He's the Nebuchadnezzar. He's the Sennacherib. He's the Darius. He's the Caesar. He's the guy. He's in charge. Joseph
power
goes.
Of life and death.
I'm sorry?
Power of life and death.
Absolutely, the power of life and death. And if you didn't do what he said, it was death. Or maybe worse, maybe torture for the next 40 years before you die. So there were things that were happening here, but God's orchestrating the entire thing. Joseph is brought in. Joseph is remembers that it's God that's going to answer the question, what do the dreams mean? There are going to be 7 years of plenty. Woohoo! 7 years of plenty. Oh, but wait. 7 years of famine that are going to be worse than the 7 years of plenty. Going to gobble everything up from the 7 years. So Joseph, in 25 through 36, is told by Pharaoh, you're in charge, looks at his officers, appoint guys to do whatever this man says. I don't care what he tells you to do. It's coming from me. You guys get to work. And so during the 7 years of plenty, I want you to notice something. 7 years of plenty. He doesn't set back a seventh to make it through. He sets back a fifth. He sets back enough for their nation and then some. That's smart. Because the famine was not going to be just limited to Egypt. You think God had a hand in that? Sure he did. So in Genesis 48, 38 through 46, we read the following. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "How can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown me this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house. All of my people will be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." Who is second in charge in all of the world now? The prisoner. The guy that had to be cleaned up and maybe given a clean shirt to put on is now second in charge of the world. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. And he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he recorded the latest rap album. Just seeing who's paying attention. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, "Bow the knee." So he set him over the land of Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paaneah, and he gave him as a wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Now, this guy's a prisoner, and later that day, they're parading him in the streets, and they're marrying him to the high priest, the main guy's daughter in the religion. And here he is, they're saying, "Bow the knee to this guy. Look, here's the signet ring of Pharaoh on his hand." He's 30 years old. So how long has he been gone from his family? 13 years. He was 17 when he was sold into slavery. 13 years he's been gone. How many years of plenty are we looking at? Seven. Extrapolate that out. How old is Joseph going to be when the years of plenty run out? 37, roughly. 37, 38. Depends on how that fell out. So he's going to be gone 21 plus years from his family when the famine hits. He's been away from his family longer than he was with his family. During the course of time, he has two children. Verse 51, his first one is Manasseh. "For God has made me forget all my toil and my father's house." The name of the second is called Ephraim. "For God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction." Now, you remember where we saw Jacob switch his hands for the blessing? Okay. Manasseh's the firstborn, but the firstborn's blessing goes to Ephraim. I wonder how much it had to do with their names. "It's made me forget my father's house," doesn't get the blessing. "But God has made me fruitful," gets the blessing. I wonder if that had anything to do with it. I don't know. But it's an interesting thing to think about. So, Joseph and his rise to power. Verses 53 through 57, The 7 years of plenty were in the land of, that were in the land of Egypt ended, and the 7 years of famine began to come. As Joseph had said, the famine was in all of the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. Why? Because of Joseph. Now, when we say because of Joseph, what are we saying? Because of God. God's the one that gave him the ability. God's the one that put him in position. God's the one that gave him the interpretation of the dream. So it's because of God. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Then Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph, whatever he says, you do." The famine was over all the face of the earth. Joseph opened the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine became severe in the land of Egypt. So all countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain because the famine was severe in all the lands. Now, how long does it take after the time of plenty to get to the point that he's got to open the storehouses? We don't know. My guess is 1 year. Go through a full cycle of planting, no reaping. All of a sudden, we're on the back end. We got nothing. It wasn't the first day that the famine started. You understand?
A supply chain shortage.
Yeah, a supply chain shortage, no doubt. So this is something that we've run into here, and there's some time. My guess is it's about a year before everything really gets bad. That's when everybody's runs out. There's nothing left. Because you got to think that during normal seasons, you got to put something back to make it to the next year while you're waiting on your crops to come in. So during that last year of plenty, everybody's putting stuff back. So it would take them about a year to run out. And then all of a sudden, they're crying out to Pharaoh, "We've got no bread, we've got no food, we're famished." So that would put Joseph somewhere around 38 years old. 21 years. Start of chapter 42. When Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why are you standing there counting your change?" You want to know why I told you that story a couple of weeks ago? That's it. Why are you standing around counting your change? What were the sons doing? What are you doing with your hands in your pockets? We're starving here. There's food over there. What are you thinking? Well, they weren't. They were doing what they did. They were doing the very thing that got Joseph put in charge of them. They were irresponsible. None of them was a leader. They were followers, but they didn't even want to follow the one who was the one that made them successful. So they sell him. My guess is they didn't have a year's provision, knowing these sons. So, why do you look at one another? And he said, "Indeed, I've heard that there's grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us that we may live and not die." The only one. Now, Jacob was a very industrious person. He was a go-getter. We saw that in how his husbandry with Laban's animals and all of that. I mean, he was a worker. But he's got 11 sons, one that he's protecting because it was the last of Rachel's sons. But the 10, the older ones, think about it. There's about five and a half years between Reuben and Joseph. So Reuben, if Joseph's 38, he's 43 and he's standing around with his hands in his pockets. He's married and has children and he's standing around with his hands in his pockets. Think about that. There's a reason that Joseph was put in charge. And it wasn't because of favoritism. It's because he's the one that got stuff done. So, Joseph's brothers go down to Egypt. Verse 9, As Joseph recognized them, but they didn't recognize him. They had told him, "We're from the land of Canaan to buy food." Verse 9, "Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them and said to them, 'You're spies. You've come to see the nakedness of the land.'" He had forgotten the dreams. Now, we talked about the humility of Joseph. Now, if he was as arrogant as some people want to contend that he was by talking about his dreams like that, he would have remembered those dreams, and as soon as he got put in charge, he would have been thinking about that, wouldn't you think? He's been in charge for 8 years now. And it's only when his brothers show up that he thinks about it. Again, the humility of Joseph. That tells us a lot. Yes, sir?
But I think he had to learn that. He wasn't humble when he went out with his coat of many colors out to his brothers and announced his dreams and told him he was going to rule over them. I don't see a lot of humility there. I see him learning it from the pit and from the prison and from Potiphar and from Pharaoh and God moving him to where finally he said, "It's not me, it's God."
And that's very possible, but the we talked about this last week, and the problem is there's nothing emotional or nothing in the text that says he was either being arrogant or humble when he said those things. We have to read that into the text. But the likelihood that he was and the likelihood that he wasn't are probably both valid perspectives. And I've heard it many different ways, but whatever his motivation was when he said those things, there were a lot of very humbling experiences he had to endure to get to where he was. That is a very valid point. Absolutely. So, Joseph starts making plans for a reunion. And he starts by what? Accusing them of being spies and putting them in jail for 3 days. Now, he's been gone for 21 years. Here's his brothers. And what does he do?
A little revenge.
There's a little bit of that. Absolutely. You think he's trying to teach them a lesson? You think that through with God being with him, and you think with the things that he has learned, that it was time for his brothers to learn a very valuable lesson? I think it was. Now, in the back of his mind, he's saying, "I'm going to get them back." Possibly. It doesn't. You know, we don't see him saying that, but his actions sure show that there he might be looking at that. But he's teaching them a lesson. Now, whether or not that lesson was from God or from his own selfishness, we can't say. But they're going to learn a lesson, aren't they? A very valuable lesson.
He's given them some time to reflect.
Yes, yes, he is. You know, he's had quite a bit of time to reflect. He got to reflect in Potiphar's house, and then he got to reflect in Potiphar's basement in the prison for a long, long time. And now he's in charge. Now he has a family. He even has a son. "This has made me forget my father's house." Another son, "I am now fruitful in my land of affliction." And here's his brother showing up. Now, remember, he hasn't seen them either in 21 years. They haven't seen him. He hasn't seen them. But he recognizes them immediately. Now, if we go back and we look historically as what was happening in Egypt among the rulers, he probably had makeup on. He probably had a very different hairstyle, his clothing, and just the maturation process from 17 to 38, he probably was thicker in his face and everywhere else. But with the, you know, with the eye shadow and all the things that the pharaohs wore, he was basically wearing a mask. They couldn't see him for who he was. Plus, they weren't looking for him. John?
Well, also, I think, you know, he is a second in command. They're here, Israelite people coming asking food. You don't want to hand it to him in the right way. You have to be a little cautious because he don't want to get a bad reference on Pharaoh. So he just a little bit, you know, I said, "Hey, I might give it to you, but I'm not going to do that right away," because he has to have a little bit.
Right.
You know, credibility in there.
That's right.
Too, so.
That's right.
Would they have been allowed to look at him?
it's hard to say. Yeah, he is speaking through an interpreter, so he's speaking a language they don't understand. Whether or not they were actually able to look directly at him or not, we're not sure. That's a really good question. But we do see him a little bit later. They don't understand what he's saying, but he understands what they're saying. So we get, because he was speaking through an interpreter. Now, he could have spoken directly to them in their language, but he chose to keep up the, and that was another layer to prevent them from recognizing who he was.
Yep.
Did I see another hand? Dave?
I don't know how much of a beard he would have had at age 17, but he's clean. It sounds like he's clean shaven.
The pharaohs were, except sometimes they would wear a goatee.
Right.
But they had no mustache, they had no facial hair in other ways at all. Now, these guys were probably kind of gruff, you know. They didn't have this nice, perfectly groomed beard like you see guys walking around with today, you know. Probably look more like Grizzly Adams, you know, for those of us that remember Grizzly Adams. Okay, so chapter 42, 21 through 28, they started talking to each other. "We are guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us." Reuben answered them, saying, "Did I not speak to you, saying, 'Do not sin against the boy,' and you would not listen? Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us." But they did not know that Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter. And he turned himself away from them and wept. Then he returned to them again and talked to them, and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Now, face to face with one that they assumed was a heathen, a pagan, an Egyptian, they are convicted in their hearts by what they've done after all this time. They finally are convicted. They've broken down. They make admissions that strike to their very souls who they are. There's this conviction or admission of the heart. They're fearing for their brother who they have to leave behind, Simeon. They're fearing for themselves, and they're going to fear for Benjamin because they've got to go and get Benjamin and bring him back. Well, our dad will never let that happen. Well, you know, your brother's going to be in jail, and he's going to die in jail if you don't bring that brother back here, because I'm going to think you're spies. There was this conviction of faith, and it's woven between the lines. It's not explicitly stated, but what is this that God has done to us? They're believing that they're being paid back for what they did to Joseph, and God's behind them. And he is. They were right. But they, in their deepest sense, is that they're being dealt with by God.
You know, that's an interesting parallel with us. Sometimes when bad things happen to us, we think God is trying to teach me a lesson, or God's punishing me, or whatever. And yet God is trying to do something eventually really good through all this.
Through the punishment, again, he's trying to teach them a lesson, like what Sister Martha was talking about. At the same time, he's also trying to bring about something amazing that they could never have imagined. So he's punishing them and blessing them at the same time. Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah.
That God's, we can't do that as human beings, but God can do that. Because our brain can't think about doing both at the same time. Because we're in punishment mode, there's no blessings going out. Right? We're in punishment mode. So, chapter 45, we'll jump ahead. 1 through 8. Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him. Now, Benjamin's come. We see everything happening with the bags and all this, you know, this shell game that he's playing with them. Make everyone go out from me, Joseph cries out. Verse 1. So no one stood with him, while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father still live? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. That was their shocked face. After all, you've got to be kidding me. This is you? Joseph said to his brothers, please come near me. So they came near. Then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. To preserve life. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, and there's still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing or harvesting. So by the time they go down to Egypt, go back home, get Benjamin, and come back, it's now 2 years into the famine. I mean, they couldn't just get on 75 and be down there in 4 hours. You know, this takes time. Plus, they had to do some arm wrestling when they got home because they didn't walk in the door and Joseph said, take Benjamin and go get your brother. There's a whole lot happening. A lot of time is elapsing. So we're 2 years into this process at this point. So now we have a 39-year-old to 40-year-old Joseph. And they're just shocked. They can't believe it's their brother. God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord over all his house and ruler throughout the land of Egypt. Okay, we talked about learning humility just a few moments ago. You think he's learned that humility? Who's getting all the credit here? And he's not saying, bow down to me, right? So whatever he had to learn, he's learned that lesson. And he's learned it well. God made all of this happen. And he did it for our benefit. He did it for our good. God knew that there was going to be this famine. He knew we needed grain. So we see him now. With his father coming, we see the blessings, and we find our way in chapter 50 of Genesis. Now, we're shortening a lot of this, but for the sake of what we're talking about in Hebrews. His father's dead, they've buried him, they return, and the brothers are sitting there talking on the way back. They're all riding in the station wagon, and he's up there in the chariot. And they're going, hey, how are we, he's going to kill us all. You know that the only reason he was nice to us was for the sake of our dad. Now, who still hadn't learned the lesson? They still had the same mind that they had before. Verse 19, Joseph says, am I in the place of God? In the world, yes, he was. He was the ruler of the world. He was God on earth, had he chosen to be. And he says, no. That is not my call. I am not God. Now that's an amazing admission for the most powerful man in the world. Second in charge of Egypt, but who had all the power? Pharaoh had given it to Joseph. He's the most powerful man in the world. And he says, I'm not in the place of God. Verse 20, chapter 50, you meant it for evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to save many people alive. See, God used you and your shortcomings to bring about this great day that we're having now. So in other words, what do they need to do? They needed to repent, they needed to change, and they needed to accept that God had made something good happen from this horrible situation. The end of the book of Genesis, beginning in chapter 22. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household. Joseph lived 110 years. He lived 17 years with his family. He was 22 years without his family. And then he spends the last 70 years of his life with his family. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were also brought up on Joseph's knee. Now, Joseph probably didn't step down from ruling the country during this period of time. Joseph said to his brethren, "I'm dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here." By faith he did that, according to Hebrews 11:22. By faith he made that statement. So you got to know the story of Joseph to understand what the Hebrew writer is talking about in that statement. So Joseph died being 110 years old, and they embalmed him and put him in a coffin in Egypt. He would have been prepared in the very same way that the pharaohs that we dig out of the tombs 3,000 years later were prepared. He would have been prepared so that they could carry his bones out and carry him back home. We talked about it last week, and the importance of it is you can tell a lot by people by how they treat their dead.
Yeah.
It's Memorial Weekend. Yesterday, for the first time ever, it was an inaugural day. They moved the ropes at the Tomb of the Unknown. How many of you saw that? One of you. They moved the ropes. They moved the sentry to the backside walking. And they allowed the public to come up. They roped off the tombs, and they allowed the public to come up and show their respect by laying flowers. Man, I wish I could have been there for that. You should see the video of the people. And there was an honor flight that went in with World War II, Korean vets, and all these old guys who once upon a time could have probably taken this whole room out. And they're in wheelchairs, and they're being wheeled up there, and they're just feebly just putting their hand up to salute. Wow. You can tell a lot by how a nation treats its dead. And here Joseph is being treated in the finest fashion, and he's telling his people, "Continue to treat me that way and take me home." That's the last words from Moses in the book of Genesis to the children of Israel who are being set free. That's significant, because the only reason we're able to go back home is because of this man that we're carrying his bones back as. Fascinating. The story of Joseph, I mean, we could spend months on Joseph and never touch it all. Such an incredible study in a godly man who had some very difficult things happen to him, but he learned over the course of his life to trust in God more and more and more. And he did it and saved all of his family and his extended family, and saved, most importantly, Judah, because it was through Judah that Jesus would come. He preserved the messianic line by being obedient to God and making himself available. We'll turn it over to Larry for our closing prayer.